if you called me up and said, your best friend just died, I would find myself standing in front of the refrigerator just staring into it, looking for something to eat. If you called me up and said, you just won a Pulitzer Prize, the same thing would happen.
That's Bill Schubart. He's a writer and a cultural and political commentator. He's chaired a lot of important boards here in Vermont. He's really smart, and he talks a lot, and a lot of people listen. What he talks less about is that he has struggled with being fat, his word, his entire life. It's not necessarily that he's averse to talking about it. In fact, he wrote a brilliant collection of stories called Fat People in 2010. His weight has been a central and consequential and painful fact of his life, but it doesn't come up in conversation. The F word. In this interview, recorded back in 2020, we talk about it. Here's Bill Schubart.
My mother was obese, had an alcohol problem and a pharmaceutical drug problem. But my overeating was very tied to my mother's overeating. She spent a lot of time in bed. And she would say, why don't you go make us some sandwiches? And we'll have them together. And I would do that, and I'd bring them in, and we'd lie there together. And that felt so warm that I began to connect maternal love with eating. Everybody was required to participate in phys ed. You had to wear shorts, and you had to wear a t-shirt. And that was some salvation, but I was also always heavy up here, you know. So if I ran, it would, you know, I would sort of have this chest jiggling thing, which I became acutely aware of. Then, you know, we'd have to go in afterwards and shower. And when there would be pickup teams to play softball or, you know, shoot hoops, and people would do the thing to, you know, see who gets to draw first, I would always be the little fat kid standing on the side. And somebody, if they were sweet and generous, would say, okay, Bill, come on with us. Or if they weren't, they'd go, well, I guess we get the fat guy. Then we get a call from my grandmother saying, well, Bill should go to Exeter. She was worried that I was just going to be raised. Her one son had died, and that I would be raised in Vermont and get no education. So I apply to and get into Exeter. And I get in, and I mean, at this point, you know, I'm trying to figure out, am I a broken person? Am I a sinner? I don't know what I am. All I know is that I'm fat. And when I went to Exeter, there was only one other fat person there. One. You know, I mean, of some 400 or 500 kids, there were two of us who were obese.
When you were at Exeter and you would go to these meals, what is the emotional experience of eating? I mean, you're in a public place.
I would be incredibly self-conscious. So I would go through the cafeteria line. Everything in me wanted to create a mound of food, but I would be taking it back to a table with seven other students sitting there who would stare at me and stare at my plate. So I would take a modest amount because I was being watched. Every Sunday night, the Exeter Inn had an all-you-can-eat buffet. I would have supper in the cafeteria. Then I would sneak out with a coat and tie on and go to the Exeter Inn by myself, which was just a few blocks down the road. And I would go through the buffet line. And in the inside pockets of my sport coat, I had the plastic liners from LPs tucked in there. And I would walk through and I'd fill my plate. And I'd go back and I'd eat everything on the plate except the lobster tails and the roast beef. And I would stuff that into the plastic thing. So when I came back to the dorm, I had these bulging pockets filled with lobster tails and roast beef.
How much of your everyday, all day reality was filtered through this fact about yourself?
All of it. When I made the decision that I was going to go to this place that dealt with compulsive eating and alcohol and drugs in Florida, they had to have an official weight for me. And there's not a scale made that could weigh me. And I didn't know whether I weighed 350 pounds or 500 pounds. I had no idea. I just knew I was immense. At that point, I was 38. It was out of control. I was so huge. I couldn't buy clothes. I couldn't sit in chairs. I couldn't do anything. So I called a friend of mine. I said, I know this is going to sound funny, but you work at Agway. I need to weigh myself because they won't let me in unless I know my weight. And I said, can I just kind of do this privately? And he went, yeah, sure. So I go down there and there's like eight people in the back room where the grain's stored in bags. And I climb on to one of those wonderful ancient old Fairbanks Morse platform scales. And I get on it and the thing goes, bonk. And everybody's going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Finally, my friend Dud looks up and he goes, pretty impressive, 492. So I notified the facility of what I weighed and they went, okay. Then I flew. Flying was terrifying to me. That I'm making someone else uncomfortable. In all the times I've flown around this country as an obese person, I've had the full range of experience. From being, how could you be so big? You are making me profoundly uncomfortable. Or even having somebody raise their hand and have the stewardess come and say, this man is too fat to be in this plane. Can you get me another seat? Full throat. To somebody being kind and saying, hey, why don't we lift up this thing? Maybe you'll be a little more comfortable. And letting me spill into their seat by an inch or two. But every time I board a plane, I live in mortal fear. Who is going to be the person next to me? Are they going to shame me and embarrass me? Or are they going to be understanding and caring? Or are they going to just ignore me, which is the best? There have been cabin stewards who have been very kind and said, oh, sir, you look very uncomfortable in this seat. I've got a couple of open seats up front. Would you like to come up and have one of those? And I would just, my heart would swell. This person understands me. So I went down there and I got assigned to one of the seats in the way back next to the restroom where there's no liftable things. There are fixed dividers in the seats. So I can't fit in there. So I end up sitting on top of it with my seatbelt extender and another one that the stewardess brought. So I get to the treatment facility and I'm a little stunned. I knew it wasn't a fancy spa. It's kind of seedy looking and I'm assigned a hospital room with another person. And after a couple of weeks, things are starting to make sense. We're having three meals a day and what was called a metabolic snack before we went to bed to kind of tide us over, which would usually be a piece of fruit or maybe some yogurt with no sugar. But the rationale there is that you're not just a compulsive eater. You are addicted to refined carbohydrates. And the model for treating addiction, the only one that's really worked is abstinence. So rather than go on a diet, you're just going to change how you relate to food and how you eat food. And you're going to have no sugar, flour, or wheat because that's the addictive element. So all of a sudden I had a model that worked. And just as when you abstain from heroin or you abstain from alcohol, the compulsion to consume both, after 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, starts to ebb. And that's what happened with me with food. I got to the point where the idea of eating refined carbohydrates, I didn't want it. That was alleviated. And I could eat 3 healthy meals a day.
Was treatment the first time you had been among that many people who were obese?
Yes.
And what was that like?
Instead of being the end of the spectrum, I was part of the spectrum.
In a work circumstance, you walk into a meeting, a board meeting. What is the presence of your weight in that circumstance?
When I walk in as board chair of some institution, I'm coming in as a respected member of the governance team. That's the definition that I'm trying to project. Now, there may be 10 trustees sitting around a table, and everyone may look at me differently. One person might say, "My God, that man's huge." Another person might say, "Oh, you know, he's doing a pretty good job as chair. It's, you know, nice to be here." I just focus on being who I am, which at that point is not a fat person. It's the chair of the board. I pretty much accept who I am. I don't think any of us, regardless of our addictions or lack of addictions, ever gets to any place of peace until we really get to that place of acceptance, accepting ourselves. When Kate and I were out spending the night at her mother's house, and I had to go into New York on business, and I hopped on, you know, a commuter train from Greenwich into Manhattan, and I'm sitting on the train, and I'm fat, but not as huge as I had been. A very large girl gets on the train and comes and sits down across from me. It's one of those face-to-face seats. And she's very fat, and her clothes don't fit. I mean, there's actually flesh, you know, you could see. And she's got a bag with a blueberry muffin in it. And she's very self-conscious because she's eating in public. And she's taking tiny little bites and nibbling. Like, I'm not a compulsive eater, because a compulsive eater would inhale that muffin in 4 bites. She's eating these little thing piecemeals, and I'm thinking, boy, that would be me. She keeps pulling her shirt down, you know, to cover her, because her clothes are way too tight. And her blue jeans are way too tight. Finally, she puts the muffin down on the seat next to her, and she sort of looks out the window a little bit. She never looks at me. Then she tries to get in her pants pocket. She's reaching like this, struggling. And she finally pulls out a cell phone, and she puts it up to her ear, and she says, "Oh, hi. Oh, God, it's so good to hear your voice. Oh, I can't wait to see you. You know, I'll be in the city in another 45 minutes. And then she finally hangs up and tries to get the phone back in her pants, which is very hard for her to do. Then she sort of stares at me for a little bit. And I'm like, you know, I try to engage her in conversation. "How you doing?" She said, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm going to see my boyfriend in New York." I said, "Well, that's wonderful." And she says, "You know, do you have someone?" I say, "Yeah, I do." And I say a little bit about Kate's and my relationship. And then we get into Grand Central, you know, all the lights and the flashing and so on and so forth. And we get in there, and she's looking so sad. And finally the doors open, and I get up and I said, "Are you okay?" And she looks at me and she said, "You knew, didn't you?" And I said, "I knew what?" She said, "There was no one on the phone." And she walked off the train. She had done this small bit of theater, telling a complete stranger on a train that she's lovable. And I never forgot that.
That was Bill Schubart back in 2020. You can find information about his book, Fat People, at vermontpublic.org/rumblestrip. Music for this show is by Callous musician Brian Clark. Rumblestrip is an independent podcast distributed on the radio by Vermont Public. This is Erica Heilman. I'll be back next week. Thanks a lot for listening.